Welcome to the Jazz Treasury. My name is Rich Sylvester. Thank you so much for tuning in once again. In this episode, we're looking at Rex Stewart, learning a little bit about the man and listening to some of his music. And just for your information, we're getting our information from a publication put out back in the 90s called Jazz Greats by the Marshall Cavendish Foundation. And that first track you heard was Trumpet in Spades, and that's Rex's concerto, played with Duke Ellington and his orchestra, featuring Rex Stewart on cornet, Arthur Wetsoy and Cootie Williams on trumpet, Joe Nanton and Lawrence Brown on trombones, Juan Tizzle on valve trombone, Barney Bogard here on clarinet, Johnny Hodges on clarinet, alto, and soprano, Harry Carney on clarinet, alto, and baritone sax, Otto Hardwick on alto sax and bass sax, and Duke Ellington, of course, on piano, Fred Guy on guitar, Hayes Alvis and Billy Teller on bass, and Sonny Greer on drums. 1936 in New York City, Trumpet in Spades, Rex's concerto. Who was Rex Stewart? Rex Stewart's cornet enlivened whatever musical company he found himself in, from his teenage years to his final sessions in Los Angeles. I think his first professional gig was at 18 years old. Other brass players marveled at his unorthodox technique. Rex's fingering was a mystery to his more formally schooled colleagues, few of whom could emulate either his spectacular speed or range of tonal effects. Stewart's forthright solos reveal a musician who combined the power and phrasing of Louis Armstrong with the lyricism of Bix Beiderbecke. Rex William Stewart, Jr. was born in Philadelphia in 1907, but he regarded the Georgetown area of Washington, D.C., where he grew up, as his home. His parents divorced early in Rex's life, and although his father was a singer and violinist of considerable ability, he had little influence over his son's musical upbringing. Fortunately, his mother's family, named Johnson after the slave owner who bought his African great-great-grandfather, Barbee, were also musical and cultured. Rex's grandmother was of native North American stock, and her heritage was another strong influence in his childhood. There was a great deal of church music in the family. Rex's grandmother played the organ, while her husband ran a choir. Later, Rex's own mother became the pianist in a theater and movie house. Young Rex, a puckish boy with a bubbling energy that spilled over in both his playing and personality, was recruited into a neighborhood brass band run by a policeman known as Pop Johnson, no relation. In Pop Johnson's brass band, Rex had learned the beginnings of cornet technique after starting out on alto horn. When Ollie Blackwell's band broke up in Philadelphia, his musical education took a new turn as he joined the Musical Spillers, a troupe of entertainers who sang, played, and danced. Rex found himself being taught to read music quickly to blow his instrument properly, to develop his speed by doing finger exercises, and to develop his ear by repeating on just his mouthpiece notes that were played to him on piano. To cap it all, he was trained to play tenor sax and to dance as he played. Rex played in and around New York and New Jersey with a great variety of bands for a year or so. He struck up a friendship with tenor saxophonist Happy Caldwell, and the two of them shared rooms and worked in many of the same bands. In 1925, Caldwell and Stewart happened to bump into the trombonist Jimmy Harrison in a record shop. The chance encounter led Rex to a job that put him on the threshold of stardom, playing in the band led by Duke Ellington's former associate, banjoist Elmer Snowden. The band also included the fine drummer Walter Johnson, pianist Freddie Johnson, and clarinetist Prince Robinson. They became a first-rate orchestra and played at several prestigious New York clubs, including The Nest. Next up, let's listen to Morning Glory. And Morning Glory is once again Duke Ellington and his orchestra, recorded in 1940, a little later than the previous track we heard, and it features Rex Stewart on clarinet, Wallace Jones and Cootie Williams on trumpet, Joe Nanton, Lawrence Brown on trombone, Juan Tizzle on valve trombone, and Ben Webster joins the band on this one here on tenor sax, and all the rest of the personnel is the same as the last time. And this is recorded in Chicago, though, in 1940. Let's listen to Morning Glory, featuring Rex Stewart and the Duke Ellington Orchestra, recorded in Chicago in 1940 on the Jazz Treasury. Ellington told the story that Rex came up with the idea for this tune as the morning broke after an all-night poker session. It features the melodic ballad side of Rex's musical personality, both in his beautiful muted statement of the main theme and the measured open horn solo following the orchestral interlude. Morning Glory. Late in 1924, Louis Armstrong arrived in New York to play in Fletcher Henderson's band. Almost immediately, every trumpeter in town was attempting to emulate the new arrival. Rex was no exception. I tried to walk like him, talk like him, I bought shoes and a suit like the Great One wore, he said. Although he was just one of a gang of trumpeters who turned up to hear Louis, Rex found himself, to his surprise, playing one night for a small number of Henderson's musicians, including Armstrong, who had come down to hear Elmer Snowden at the Nest. Not long afterwards, Armstrong phoned Rex at the club to ask him if he would like to take his place in Henderson's band. Perhaps because he was still just 18, or maybe because, despite his training from the Spillers, Rex was a little unsure of himself musically, his first period with Henderson was not an unqualified success. He made a few dramatic appearances on records, notably in The Stampede, where his opening solo is a fiery marker of his talent. But he was made the butt of teasing by Coleman Hawkins and was subjected to more serious bullying from Henderson's trombonist, Charlie Green. And because of this, Rex told Henderson that his mother was ill and left the band. He sought solace in the bottle himself, was rescued by Henderson's wife, who colluded with Rex's mother to get him sent to Wilberforce, Ohio, with a band led by Fletcher's younger brother, Horace. Rex's time in Horace Henderson's band was beneficial all around. When they played at the Savoy, trumpeter Bill Coleman was working in Lloyd Scott's orchestra, playing alternate sets. Bill remembered that Rex was the fastest man on trumpet I had ever heard. His execution of Tiger Rag was faster than many clarinetists could play. By the late 1920s, Rex was a star soloist in the Henderson band, a role he repeated in further stints with them in 1932 and 1933 through 34. Between times, he followed Benny Carter into McKinney's Cotton Pickers. Rex's debt to Armstrong was always apparent. Bud Freeman recalls bumping into the Henderson band on the road and being given a note by Rex to take back to Chicago for Louis Armstrong. It said, "Dear Rubber Lips, you are my idol. God bless you and keep on blowing. Your boy, Rex." All right, let's move on to another track. Let's listen to Rexatious. And this is Rex Stewart and his 52nd Street Stompers, featuring Rex Stewart on cornet, Lawrence Brown on trombone, Johnny Hodges on soprano sax and alto sax, Harry Carney on clarinet and baritone sax, Duke Ellington playing piano, Brick Flegel or Seeleyberg on guitar, Billy Taylor on bass, and Sonny Greer on drums. This is Hollywood 1936. Let's listen to Rexatious on the Jazz Treasury. Thank you. And that was Rexacious, 1936 in Hollywood, Rex Stewart and his 52nd Street Stompers. Despite its title, this is very much an ensemble piece rather than a Stewart vehicle. There's a particularly joyous Hodges alto solo and a rare example of Harry Carney's clarinet soloing before Lawrence Brown's trombone brings in Hodges again, this time playing soprano, while Carney picks up his more familiar baritone. Only after this does Rex begin his own jaunty solo. It took the genius of Rex's next employer, Duke Ellington, to transplant that style into an environment where it could grow and flourish. Many of Ellington's musicians recognized that Duke's uncanny ear heard something in their playing that he could only incorporate into his arrangements to make them sound individual, distinctive, and better than they did in other surroundings. Rex Stewart is the exemplar of this. Many of his colleagues went on the record to say that Duke understood exactly how to use his growls, half-valve effects, and phenomenal speed and range. It's a positive thing that Duke will write compositions for you, around you, that help to develop you musically, said Stewart's good friend Ben Webster. Rex had his special sound, and Duke knew exactly how to use it. Ellington wrote many features for Rex, who, apart from one short break, spent 11 years with him. In that time, he made dozens of small group discs with his fellow bandsmen and other leaders, but his main contribution was to blend his individual sound into the many recordings he made with Ellington's full orchestra. A gradual decline in band morale, coupled with a personality feud, led Rex to quit Ellington in December 1945. He left the USA in October 1947 and stayed away for a number of years, traveling as far as Australia. Perhaps the most memorable moment was being the first American jazzman to appear in Berlin after World War II, playing his inaugural concert at the half-demolished Delphi Palace in the front of thousands of Germans and almost as many Russians who had illegally crossed from their sector of the divided city. Jazz had been progressively banned under the Nazis, and the audiences were not sure what to expect. When the Americans came to Berlin, we German jazz lovers had hoped they would bring some jazz, wrote Berliner Gerhard Conrad, but it was bebop which came. And we were not ready for it. Now, 3 years later, there had arrived a real live jazz musician, and with him, he bought real live jazz. All right, next track, Singing the Blues. Now, let's listen to Rex playing with Fletcher Henderson and his orchestra. And this orchestra recorded this in 1931 in New York City, featuring Rex Stewart on cornet, Russell Smith and Bobby Starr on trumpet, Benny Morton and Claude Jones on trombone, Russell Prokop and Harvey Boone on clarinet and alto saxophone, Coleman Hawkins on clarinet and tenor, Fletcher Henderson on piano, Clarence Holliday on guitar, John Kirby on tuba, and Walter Johnson on the drums. No bass here. Tuba takes that role. 1931, New York City. Let's listen to Singing the Blues.
listening to the Jazz Treasury Podcast with Rich Sylvester.
All right, Rex Stewart, singing the blues. There would be other visits to Europe for Rex, although a few of them quite as triumphal, but Rex entered a period of instability and change in his life. After all the years on the road with Ellington, he dabbled in various activities, finding that he was no farmer, but had a natural talent as a broadcaster. He soon became a regular contributor to Downbeat and other jazz magazines. The most prolific period as a writer came in the 1960s, after he settled into Los Angeles. His musical career continued in the meantime. The Fletcher Henderson Reunion Band made some stellar recordings under his direction, ranking among the most exciting big band discs of the 1950s. He reveled in a brass section, including trumpeters Paul Webster and Emmett Berry, trombonist J.C. Higginbottom, and the tenor saxophone titans Ben Webster and Coleman Hawkins. All right, let's listen to Fat Stuff Serenade, written by Ellington and Stewart together. This is Rex Stewart and his 52nd Street Stompers once again, featuring Rex on cornet, Louis Bacon on trumpet, Joe Natten on trombone, Barney Bagard here on clarinet, Duke Ellington on piano, Brick Flegel on guitar, Billy Taylor on bass, and Sonny Greer on drums. New York City, 1939. Let's listen to Fat Stuff Serenade, featuring Rex Stewart. Okay, that was Fat Stuff Serenade, Rex Stewart, Ellington on piano there. The traditional band, led by Eddie Condon at his club, was Rex's home for almost a year in 1959. He made as great an impact as Roy Eldridge would at the rival Jimmy Ryan's. His effect on Condon was so profound that his successor, Buck Clayton, had to put up with his guitarist, leader constantly addressing him as Rex. Stewart lived well in Los Angeles. There were no signs of a slow decline. But when he died of a stroke in 1967, the end was unexpected. Rex did not live to see either his acclaimed collection of downbeat pieces nor his almost finished autobiography, hailed as among the most perceptive and well-written of jazz books in print. his most telling tribute from his old Ellingtonian colleague Ben Webster, was published in The Melody Maker. Quote, "Rex sure had a unique style. His death is a great loss because I'm sure he knew some things about the trumpet that maybe no one else will ever know." So Rex Stewart's unique cornet style shines through whatever the setting, whether in the big bands of Ellington and Henderson that made him famous or the most intimate setting of his own, smaller outfits. And before we go today, I'd like to do a little tribute playing here. Someone asked to hear some Lee Konitz. One Jazz Treasury fan contacted me and said, "Could you please play some Lee Konitz?" And I said, "Yeah, let's see what I can dig up." And I found an album put out in 1961. And it features Lee Konitz on alto sax, Sonny Dallas on bass, and Elvin Jones on drums. Just three pieces here, just a trio. And the album is called Motion, and he does some classics. So let's listen to Lee Konitz doing the track Foolin' Myself on the Jazz Treasury. Thank you. All right, that's it for this episode of the Jazz Treasury. Thank you so much for listening. And thank you for all the likes and all the messages on Facebook. Please check out our Facebook page. Get in touch. Post some of your favorites and some of your links, and I'll check them out too. Be sure to go, when you do listen to our podcast, please like and review and rate it. It helps us go up the ladder a little bit. By the way, the background music you hear during the Jazz Treasury episodes, that's played by Benny Green. A track called Folks That Live on the Hill. Next, we listen to Stompin' at the Savoy. Once a month, we put out these episodes. And the next one coming up is Stompin' at the Savoy. The Savoy Ballroom, the home of Happy Feet, was Harlem's workshop for new dances and a fierce training ground for the orchestras that contended in band battles there. Through records and radio, bands such as Chick Webb's and the Savoy Sultans became national names. And we'll hear from some people like Jimmy Lunsford played there, Fletcher Henderson, Lionel Hampton, Charlie Barnett, and several others. We'll be checking out the Savoy next. In the meantime, thanks for listening and enjoy the jazz.